It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Pharmaceutical companies and drug distributors have paid out billions of dollars in settlement money in state and local lawsuits over their roles in the opioid drug crisis.
But now the big question is, what should that money be used for?
A coalition of nearly 200 organizations across the U.S. signed on to a second annual roadmap offering guidance for spending opioid settlement funds. The statement calls for more addiction treatment and harm reduction instead of using the money for law enforcement.
In addition to guidance, the roadmap gives specific examples of what the groups label as good and problematic spending around the country, including here in Wisconsin. The state comes up twice in the good category and once on the problematic side.
Aneri Patani has been following debates over the opioid settlement money as senior correspondent for KFF Health News. Aneri, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into this roadmap from this coalition of groups, can you talk a little bit about this settlement and the money that that we're trying to figure out what to do with?
Yeah, so it's actually several different settlements with more than a dozen different companies, each of whom either, you know, manufactured prescription painkillers, distributed them, or sort of were the point of sale pharmacies, your CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, where people went to pick them up, and were sued for playing a role in fueling the opioid crisis. And each of these companies, you know, is settled in a slightly different way, different timelines for their payouts. But the overarching theme is that there are billions of dollars coming to state and local governments across the country, and the majority of it is supposed to be spent on what they call opioid remediation, but basically things that will help address the current crisis and prevent future ones.
That's still a pretty broad brush, right? And that's led to some debates that you've been covering. What are some of the arguments over what fits into that category and what does not?
Yeah, you're exactly right, because the idea of, you know, what is going to address the crisis depends on who you talk to. Different people have very different views on this. There is some guidance in the settlements. There's a thing called Exhibit E that lists kind of potential ways you could fund this, but even those items are kind of broad. So it might say something like increase access to medical treatment for addiction. But someone could do that by increasing the number of medical providers in a space. They could do it by funding telehealth. They could do it by paying for people's co-pays or helping those who are uninsured. So there's a lot of variety in there. And where I've seen the most contention is there are some items in that Exhibit E list that reference first responders and law enforcement and supporting them. But they are sort of vague. And so you have folks on one side saying we should only be giving money to first responders for things like harm reduction, like naloxone. People often know the brand name Narcan that they can give to someone who's had an overdose and revive them. And other people say, you know, we need to be funding everything that helps law enforcement with getting drugs off the street. And that can include cars and guns and vests.
Now, here we have this roadmap, a coalition, 192 groups, at least one in Wisconsin, Citizen Action of Wisconsin. They put together this document. You've been looking over it. You reported on it. What is the main thrust of this coalition of groups?
They are saying that the money has to be spent on public health approaches, and that means treatment and harm reduction. And they're saying, you know, quote, not a single dollar is what should go to law enforcement. They really don't see this as money that should go towards criminal justice or jails or police. They say it's for treatment, it's for public health, it's for housing services, legal aid, recovery to work programs. That's where they want to see this money go.
And they give a pretty extensive list of, hey, here's some good case studies where we like what states or local governments are doing with the money, and here are some worst cases. Can you talk through some of the examples they share?
Absolutely. So let's pick one from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Then they point to Dane County, where the county has used about $100,000 of their opioid settlement funds to study the feasibility of opening an overdose prevention center. And that's a place where people can use drugs under supervision. And there are individuals there who have Narcan, who are able to revive them, who can get them medical help if they need, who can also connect them to different social services should they want it. And this is something that folks in the harm reduction realm are really passionate about, feel that at a time when more than 100,000 Americans die a year from drug overdoses, if we had more of these centers, more lives could be saved. And so they point to that as sort of a prime example of something they want to see money go toward.
We are talking about opioid lawsuit settlement money, how it's being used around the country, a big coalition of groups saying, hey, let's have more harm reduction and treatment, less direct law enforcement use of this money, looking at what it means for Wisconsin. Aneri Patani is with us, senior correspondent for KFF Health News. Had a conversation with Attorney General Josh Call a couple months back about one of the items that this report talks about, a kind of item, a drug take-back day. Here's a listen.
You know, Wisconsin has consistently been at or near the top of the country on the drug take back program. Fundamentally, I think it's about the partnerships that we have with law enforcement agencies and public health departments around the state who are really committed to this program.
So through the state's Department of Justice, some grants went out to local communities, to police departments for these drug take back days. It seems like as I'm reading the report, Aneri, this is not on the recommended list, the drug take back concept.
No, actually, on the roadmap, this falls under some of their, you know, we don't want to see money spent on this. And the thought behind that is drug takebacks are, you know, folks bringing in their prescription drugs, leftover medications from the house, giving it to the police. I don't think, you know, most people don't see a lot of harm in that. But there's not a ton of research that suggests it prevents overdose deaths or that it saves lives. Particularly when we look at where the overdose crisis is today, though it may have begun and been fueled by prescription painkillers, it's largely today fueled by fentanyl, synthetic opioids that are sold on the street. And so getting medications out of people's homes is maybe not the most effective way to save lives. And so these groups often say, you know, if we're putting money towards that and it's not the most effective use, we have less money to put towards the more effective uses that research suggests would do more to save lives.
You've, as I mentioned, been reporting on this debate over the use of settlement money for a while. What are some of the most, what critics at least have seen as some of the most egregious uses of the settlement money that they say really just go way off the intent?
I think some of the things that critics have been really upset about are money used to buy police cars, to buy, you know, vests, to buy in Texas, there's a town that used its money to buy a BolaWrap wrap device, which is a device that police carry around that sort of shoots out a wire that can help apprehend suspects. And they really just don't see this money as the purpose being sort of law enforcement and apprehension and so there's been a lot of criticism of those types of uses.
If this had been money, you know, appropriated in the federal budget by Congress, signed by the president, it might have come with more strings attached. It isn't. It's under these legal settlements, as you mentioned. Has there been any effort in Congress to try to define what states and local governments can and can't do with this money?
There have been two little spurts, I would say. There was one effort where a group of Democratic congressional lawmakers sent a letter to the White House and the Office of National Drug Control Policy, essentially saying, you know, we want you to take a more active role in overseeing this money and giving states guidance. And the Office of National Drug Control Policy wrote back to them saying, we don't really have that authority. Congress needs to work on that. So following that, there was a introduction of a bill in Congress called the Opioid Settlement Accountability Act that tried to sort of lay out acceptable uses. The bill was sort of bare bones, and then it didn't end up moving forward. So there's been little spurts here and there, but nothing that's really stuck or gained traction.
What's really at the heart of this, of course, is, hey, is this money actually being used in a way that's helping deal with the opioid crisis, leading to fewer addictions, fewer overdoses, and fewer overdose deaths? Are people measuring the impact of the various uses of this settlement money? Are people weighing these and saying, hey, what's working, what isn't?
That is such a difficult question to answer because it depends where you are in the country. If you look by and large nationally, no, I'm not aware of any group that is really able to evaluate the effectiveness nationwide. But there are, you know, certain counties or certain states that are trying to put in measures so that, you know, folks who get grants from this money have to then come back to the state and say, well, how many people did we help or what impact did it have? But a lot of this is still in the early stages. Money went out last year, a lot of it this year. So there hasn't been time for folks to come back and say how well it's doing. Everything we have is sort of initial inklings. And I think there's going to be a larger push we'll see in the coming years for more of this evaluation because the opioid settlement money continues to flow for, 15 plus years. So you need to have that evaluation to say the things we funded in years 1 through 5, should we still be funding those in years 6 through 10?
One of the issues I think being brought up by this coalition and by people reporting on this is how much transparency is there on how this money is being used? How much of it is kind of happening under the radar? Do you have a sense that we know where this is all going, that it's being reported appropriately, and that people are paying attention?
Unfortunately, I don't. I think the lack of transparency is one of the largest themes and repeated themes that I've been hearing since I started reporting on this money 2 years ago. There are some places that have, developed these public dashboards or public reports on how the money's being spent, but a lot of places just have not created a mechanism or a requirement for where the money goes. And so I've fielded calls from so many parents who lost their kids to overdoses, people in recovery themselves who say, I can't figure out where the money is. And so they're trying to attend city council meetings, county commissioner meetings, calling their elected officials and saying, what are you doing with this? We have ideas on it. And depending on where people live, they're having very different levels of success in tracking this money.
Aneri, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Aneri Patani, senior correspondent for KFF Health News, talking about how Wisconsin and states and communities around the country are using opioid settlement legal funds. You can weigh in on this. How do you think your government should use this settlement money when it comes to opioid addiction? Is there something in your community that you think should be the top priority? Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.